All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another podcast of the American Spaniel Club Archival Committee, where we explore our past and for the future record it. My name is Charlie Bourne. I'm your host, and our guest today is Laura Henson. Welcome, Laura.
Hi.
Hey. So Laura is in Maryland. Maryland. And
yeah, I'm in Maryland.
I'm here in Nevada, and for those of you that don't know Laura Henson and Kaplar Cockers, I suggest you go to the ASC website. Laura was nominated to the Hall of Fame in, I think, 2004. She's been breeding for over 52 years. She's bred over 200 champions. She's been mentored to a ton of people, and she has a long history with the breed, and that's what we want to talk about today. So for a little bit more background, if you do not know Laura, please go to the Spaniel Club website. But without further ado, Laura, are we ready to start our little chat?
Sure, yeah.
Ready. Well, you know, I think a good place is always to dive in and start from the beginning. So tell us, how did you become interested in Cocker Spaniels?
Well, I was interested long ago because at 13 I wanted a Cocker Spaniel, so I had this little black Cocker Spaniel. And then I went away, I got married, and we were in college at Purdue, so we did have a boxer then, but I didn't have any kids, I mean any dogs then, until we had our three girls and moved out in Long Island, where my husband was in service, and then we moved back to California, and but I bought a little red cocker from Dorothy Vandeveer, and when she was 4 months old, and took her to California. And when she came in season, when she was about four, I decided to breed her to show my three girls the thing.
The
magic of birth. Yeah, I guess you'd say. And so I was smart enough to look up in a magazine and found a champion black dog that I bred to. So the people that owned the black dog, Don and Jim Frommer, took it from there and got me interested in showing. And they came out to look at the puppies. They cut the puppies' tails. They told me what to do. And so then we just kind of went from there, and they took three of them to keep at their house and train, and they didn't all three finish, the two black ones did finish their championships. That was Donna and Jim Frommer, and they were some of the people out there in California that started me off.
Their kennel name, Laura, was, what was her kennel name, do you remember?
The
Frommers?
Frommers, yeah. I had it on some of my dogs. See, there we go with the memory.
Yeah, it's okay, because I can... Oh, well, we'll come back to it. But Donna and Jim Frommer were really longtime breeders out in Southern California, right?
Yeah, they were, and they're the ones that taught... Jim taught me how to trim. I mean, I sat through two of his trimming things. I swear to God, he took 5 hours to trim, do a show trim.
Oh, really?
Very carefully. Every hair.
Sort of like you do.
Well, and that's where I learned. That's where I learned. And then also from Mary Doty. Not that she taught anybody, but she had that trimming book.
Oh.
And I always thought her dogs looked so and I thought, how does she get those pictures to look so good? But anyway, that's so I just kind of watched for 2 years out there and watched Diana Kane and Lee Wendleton, how they stacked their dogs and handled them and all that, and didn't want to go in the ring myself at all. I trimmed them, but I didn't want to go in the ring.
Hmm.
So, but
what got you going in the ring?
Well, they did, but because they kept the three, and I ended up showing. I bred her and went to shows, and then one time, Carl Anderson was supposed to show a dog for me, and he had won with two things, and so he made me take it in the group, and I swear to God, I was scared to death, but My kneecaps were jumping up and down. But anyway, and so, but what really got me in the ring, I guess, was because we moved back here. And so I had to take over showing them that, you know, because mm-hmm. we didn't have anybody out here to show the dogs. So I had to take them in the ring myself.
Well, you pushed me in the ring, you know.
Well, that's kind of what, I guess probably we all get pushed because we all think we can't do it.
Right. Yeah. So how did you find Dorothy Vanderveer? So her kennel name was Vandor. And for those
that
don't
we
know,
living,
she...
we were living in Annandale, which is that far. Mm-hmm. She lived down in Fairfax, and I guess we wanted a cocker because we looked at a boxer because that's what we had had, and we had the three girls, and this one was about 7 or 8 months old, knocked all three girls flat in one fell swoop, so we decided to look for a cocker and went out to her and bought this little red cocker, little bitch, and then we did take her to a match, and a Maryland Cocker Spaniel Club match, and Ruth ended up showing her, because I guess I didn't have the slightest idea what to do with a dog on the lead. I mean, I knew nothing.
Right.
I'd never seen it. Yeah. And she took it in the last because I guess her dog got beat and won the match. So that kind of what...
Wow.
That's what kind of got us into show, and we thought that was wonderful.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Do you know Ruth did that to me when I was in high school? She took my bitch that I had a match show, and she said, you know, she's really nice. You're not doing much for her.
Yeah, that's probably what she thought.
That was Ruth. So looking back, you know, with what you know now, what do you wish you knew then?
Well, you know, of course, you learn as you go along what the dog is supposed to be and how to train the puppies from the time they're little and you know, what to do. And I think that the best way to do is to look at the people that are showing and watch them very carefully and learn, you know, learn how they're doing it and ask them for help if you need it. I think I kind of did that because I was too chicken to go in the ring for two whole years, so I was doing a lot of watching. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you, from, you know, what you've said, you did a lot of it, and it really you learned a lot from it too, which is something to remember.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think you keep learning. I mean, I think you really keep learning, and because we did the judges seminars. And then I work with Betty Dudding and Louise Milner on both the Blue Book and the video when we did it. And each time you do those things, you learn more new things about handling and showing and everything. So, the more you do to help along those lines of helping other people, the more you learn too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out that if that boxer had been better to your three daughters, you could be, might not be talking. You'd have been a big boxer breeder.
Boxer breeder, yeah. I love boxers now today even. I think they're so pretty.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of related, and maybe you've sort of answered it, but is there anything, you know, the world is so different today in dogs than it was when you started 50 years ago. What would you advise people who are trying to begin in cockers now?
Well, I always did say that, you know, you really find out who you're getting them from and try to have somebody that does know help pick you out a puppy if you're going to show. But to start slow. And don't go out and try to buy three or four things. We started out with that one bitch. We bred her. We kept a bitch from that, and we just kind of built like a pyramid. And I think I only bought one bitch that I can remember the whole time, and it was because she was by my dog, and the owner had quite a few bitches, I guess, and so she had sent this bitch out for me to show, and I ended up keeping her, but. I think you just have to, you know, build on what you've got. And we never kept dogs when we first started, like the special. We kept the bitches because unless you got a dog that people are going to breed to, and unless you're famous already, they're not going to be beating the door down to breed to your dogs, and then you're going to end up with a whole lot of dogs and no place to put them and not be able to keep the things you need to keep out of each breeding. So that's kind of one of the things that I would tell somebody is to take it slow and, you know, build on what you've got to get a better bitch out of each bitch that you have and correct the faults and stuff.
You know, it's funny, but you're sort of a living testament to something that my old mentor said, which is buy the best, absolute best bitch that you can buy. Don't buy a dog. You can always go breed to some dog, but, you know, you need to have the best bitch. And you were very lucky that first...
We lucked into it. I said we did.
Yeah. I mean, because Dorothy sold that to you as a pet, right?
Yeah.
But she had some really good dogs, you know.
And then when we went out to California and I wanted to breed, he was about four, I don't know, I picked up some dog magazine in a vet's office, I think, and found this name, and it was Pat Seeger's SNR, and it was that dog. And he was built like a Mack truck, and that's where I think we got all the substance that we have today. All the bone and substance was from him. And that's who
SNR. I remember that name, and I think the Fromer's kennel name was Fromer.
No.
They used their last name as their kennel name, but anyway, never mind. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Okay. I should have looked that up.
Yeah. No, that's all right.
I remember their names.
It's okay. So anyway, among all the things that you've achieved in the 50-plus years you've been in dogs, this is always a hard question to ask, but what's the most significant achievement that you feel, or maybe the most significant two? And then tell me more about them.
You mean achievements or wins or what?
Achievements, whatever you want to translate that to be.
Well, I think that after 50 years, that I started out with stuff that wasn't perfect, of course. We had some slip stifles. We just found out about cataracts when I got in it and started checking for that. And we had some personality problems with some screamers along the way. But when I got to this point where I am now, I think I got rid of all the things that I didn't like, and I had dogs that had a lot of substance, they had good fronts, they had beautiful heads, because I didn't start out with real pretty heads either, and they have good temperaments, the coats are real good, I hate kinky curly coats on stuff, and they got good guard hair, and I got to the point where I had really what I thought was almost a perfect dog. They all got little problems, but as well as I could do, I got rid of all the bad things in the 50, of course it took me 50 years, but got rid of the bad things.
You had quite a bit of success, you know, along the way.
And I did, because I won, you know, a best in show with Jiminy Cricket, and he was only 15 months old. I had finished him in November, specialed him a couple of times, and took him to Spaniel Club, but it was because he went loose lead that Jane Forsyth put him best in show at Spaniel Club, I'm sure, because nobody did it then. But I just had trouble with him cutting corners, and we trained him on a chain martingale that really tightened up around his neck, and boy, he stopped that, and so I just would start around the ring and let the lead go down to his shoulders, and she was very impressed. But when I think he was only 15 months old and won Spaniel Club, and those were big Spaniel clubs.
Yeah, they were big.
That was a fantastic thing. And then, of course, my daughter won, Lindy, won the black variety that we weren't expecting at all with her little Kelly girl bitch. And so that was a very exciting thing. And then when Maddie, Heart Song, Kepler's Heart Song, won the Ascot variety at 9 years old, two or three years ago. Yeah, that was a surprise and very...
very happy moment. Yeah, very happy moment. Yeah. Remember, all the way around, everybody was beaming on that one.
Yeah.
So, of all your Cockers, this is like mothers love all their children equally. Are there any individual dogs that were especially memorable for you?
Well, I think all of those, and my, God, wait a minute. I got to turn my page here with my notes. Yeah. No, I had the first ones, as I said, were bitches that I special because I didn't keep too many of the really good dogs. But my copycat and carbon copy bitches that were out of the same litter. And then their brother, who was Royal Cavalier, who went Best in Show with Tom Campbell. And then Jiminy Cricket and then my Prince of Tides dogs was my black and tan dog. And I love my black and tans. They're still my favorites. And he was such a good show dog. I mean, I don't think there was ever a time that he didn't show. And he always did. And I specialed him for a long time, and he did very well. And then, of course, Maddie, my heart song dog, who I have here now. He's going to be he was 14 in March.
Oh, wow.
And he's with me. Yeah, he's the only dog I got here. And then High Tops Fletch Dancer, as Tommy says, God, and because he was very instrumental in really coming up with beautiful bodies and heads and everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember when I traveled with you to shows, as most everybody probably knows, we used to travel together. You always preferred specialing the bitches versus the boys.
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they're easier. They're not as heavy to pick up.
Yes, that's what you said. They're not as headstrong either.
No, they're the girls. I don't know. I did quite a few of the girls really. Copycat was my black and tan. That was really my first special that won groups and everything because she really did. She was a showgirl, and so beat her brother. Few times.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't, Tom didn't like that.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm talking with Betty here next week, I think, so maybe that'll come up. That's dogs. How about people? People that stand out for you.
Well, of course, the Frommers did when I first started out in California, and Carl and Rosalie Anderson were, the one thing I remember Carl telling me when we had our first buff bitch out of a litter we bred, Cameo Caper, and I took her to a show for him to go over and evaluate for me, and he went over her, and he said, fantastic. She shouldn't be beaten, but she will be. And that was one thing that I tell people all the time when they think they've got this really pretty dog, that I don't care how good they are, that there's going to be times when you think they should win and they don't because of the judge and whatever, And so just don't think that every time you walk in the ring you're going to win with this thing because it's really good. Yeah, so you have to learn to take the losses with the good things. And when I came out here, I was kind of like on my own in California. I'm from California, and I went to shows with people. But then I had Dot Mustard and now Esther, and they were my breeding partners and going to the show and helping me and everything. And, of course, Tom Dowell, who's taken a lot of my stuff and made it popular, made it good too, so, and helped me along the way. So it, there's people, but I kind of just learned by watching, I think, more than anything, being very, very watching the people and how they did it.
Yeah, that's an important lesson people don't continue to learn and watch. And you can watch what's good and what's bad too, So you can learn from both. We talked about dogs and people. Are there any shows or wins or events that were particularly memorable for you? And if so, tell me about them.
Well, those ones that I told you about winning Best in Show with Jiminy Cricket. And being taken into the Hall of Fame, that was a big surprise and, and very exciting for me. And
that was 2004.
Well, I didn't remember the year, so.
Yeah, 2004. Yeah. I looked it up.
But, I wasn't expecting anything like that, and so that's really nice. And I really like to help anybody that wants help with trimming or I'm still trimming people's puppies here when I can and helping with that because I like to trim. People don't like to trim, but I like to trim.
Yes.
And I don't mind helping people learn. And you know, some people say they're afraid to ask somebody, but that's silly. Ask, you know, for some help. And sometimes we'll tell somebody, well, if you took this hair off of here, why, you know, you'd be much better off. And so we have to be the old people to help the young ones and help them learn.
Well, that's great. It makes
a big difference on how you trim a dog. I've learned that on my own by watching my dogs. Yeah. I remember one, she was a buff bitch. She was really pretty. And it was before we started kind of trimming the undercoat, you know, the side coat to
mm-hmm.
make it shape it.
Right.
People were running it clear down to the floor before. And this bitch was a really pretty bitch, and she'd blown her coat like buff bitches do, and she looked a little long. And I would stack her up, and I'd say, I don't think she looks long. And she hadn't went. And then I realized by looking at a picture I had on the wall of another buff bitch that her belly coat was going the wrong way. It was longer from the back and then shorter up the front. So I retrimmed it, making it, the feet and the back of the front feet coming angling up, and then her belly coat had to cut some of it off and making it go the right way. And the very next show was a Maryland specialty, and she went best opposite to best of breed. So I decided then that we should trim the belly coats on
yep.
this dog. But I didn't realize it makes a difference in how long the dog looks. It really does.
I remember you telling me that and doing it with great trepidation.
Yeah, especially if she doesn't have a lot of coat, but it's better for it to be shaped the right way than the wrong way. I mean,
You're telling me to take off what little hair there is.
Oh, I have a funny story to tell about you, though, because it was a black and tan dog, and I had it up on the table. I have no idea where it was, but you said to me, why have you got all that hair on his face? And I said, what hair? I didn't realize that I should be, my eyesight was getting bad enough I needed to put glasses on to do their faces. And I guess there was some little hair sticking out there on their muzzle. So I always tell people about the time that you said that. Why are you leaving all that hair on your face?
Well, that was probably the only time in history that I ever corrected your trimming. Because otherwise, it was always, Laura would come over to me and go, did you trim that top knot?
Oh, top knots are the worst, yeah. Top knots to stick up like a rooster's crow.
I would try to trim the backs on them, and I would destroy the damn thing, and then I would have to call and commiserate what I've just butchered this dog up. And then you'll have to fix it. Then I get to the show, and you'd come, okay, well, let me look, let me hear, let me fix it. So everybody needs a little groom master like that to follow around.
Yeah, well, sometimes we just don't see it on our own, you know, or we don't see it running around the ring, so we don't know, you know.
Yeah.
And there's something sticking up on the back or, you know, something needs to be fixed here or something.
Yeah.
But
it's always good now. When I would judge sweepstakes or I did the futurities, I get to be such a, you know, groomer that when I'm judging the dog, I go, well, you know, you could have trimmed this top knot better. Or, you know, if you took a little hair off the rump here, she would look a whole lot better. And I kind of, when we do, you know, judges seminars, and I know you do this as well, is you talk to these judges that are starting to learn about the breed, that this is a hair breed, and you can create illusions with the
mm-hmm.
way you trim the dog, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys that did all the handbooks and everything always talked about that. So it's an important thing for people to learn.
Well, and then I used to, when we had the judges seminars, and they would complain that they couldn't tell where, and I said, well, you know, it's the handler's job to trim it off so you can tell where the feet are going and stuff, and if they don't do it, don't put the dog up. It's their own darn fault.
Yeah.
The dog doesn't look good, you know. So,
well, a lot of judges that come from, you know, short-coated breeds.
I know, they have trouble.
It's difficult, yeah. And then when they're in grass, it's even worse, you know. So you have to understand that. But anyway, so looking back over your life, we talked about a bunch of things, and we're on a sort of a time crunch here a bit.
Okay.
But is there anything that we didn't talk about that you want to share with our listeners that you want them to know that we didn't get to cover?
No, I can't think of anything except that if you're new in the breed and you want help, don't be afraid to go up to somebody you think is somebody that you're afraid to go up and talk to, you know, to ask them questions or ask for help, because I think we all want new people to come into the breed, and we're losing a lot of people, and especially the kids. And on Facebook now, we can really keep congratulating these kids that are working hard to learn and are going to be our handlers coming up. And so be sure you keep encouraging them to, you know, to keep going and do a good job, because we've got some really nice ones out here in the East Coast, young kids that are coming up, thank God.
That's great. You know, I got started when I was 13 or 14, and it was my aunt, of course, that got me started, you know, Marguerite. But I remember, like, Ruth Benhoff and Art and Tom O'Neill and a lot of breeders that are now passed away. You know, as a kid, they were so encouraging. And, you know, it really, looking back on it, I didn't realize it at the time, but, you know, that is the future of the breed. You just never know.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
So I thank you for doing that. You've done that for a lot of us, you know, grown-ups as well. So we have a lot to thank you for that.
Sometimes I look at those heads with a dot, not that I can't stand it, so I got to go over and,
yeah.
and try to fix it. Well, I'm trying to think of it. One time, Jessica had two that went into going to go into the group, and one of them was her black dog that she was specialing, and she wanted me to take it in the group. And I said, I'm not going to take it unless you let me fix his head. So I had the honor of teaching Jessica how to trim the top knot.
Well, and talk about kids, we remember Jessica when, you know, she was just a teenager. Now she's a mom and a handler herself. So,
but she was so talented even at the young. You can tell the ones that are going to be good when they're young like that. Yeah,
yeah,
and we've got some more ones coming up. But
I never will forget. Whenever I see Jessica, I think of Jessica as 13.
13. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. Laura, it's been awesome talking with you. Of course, personally, I love to talk, and we can talk for hours on end, but this podcast is supposed to be about 30 minutes, and I think we've done that.
Okay.
And I think you've shared a lot of your history and a lot of your knowledge, and I want to thank you for all of your, you know, devotion over all these years to the breed and for being the icon that you are. And we look forward to seeing you, and I look forward to seeing you hopefully at some shows nearby. And if you have a grooming problem and you see Laura, give her a pair of thinning shears and she'll help you.
I go to the show and I take my little sack with my scissors.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because I always have to trim some on Esther. She, you know, she doesn't have time. She works and she doesn't have time. And she
Esther's doing a great job. She's really
She's left-handed, and it's really hard for her to do everything backwards,
That's
awful. She and Tommy are both left-handed.
Oh, I didn't know Tommy, too. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's really hard for them to, you know, to thin and get rid of the lines and stuff like that and stuff. So
do they make left-handed shears, or do you use a right-handed one?
If they are, they're hard, and I don't know whether she's tried or not, but they don't work. But so she does it, and then I go to the shows with my scissors, and I finish trimming as much as I can, so that because that's what takes the time. The
well, Laura, thank you so much for the conversation
today.
I enjoyed it. Always a good time, and thank you for sharing your thoughts and your knowledge. And with this, I will close out this podcast. It'll be up on the website, and thank you again.
Well, you're welcome, certainly.
Okay.
See you soon.
Oh, yes. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.